Welcome to show number 43 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. What is happening, everybody? Hopefully everybody's doing well out there. I finally got off my lazy behind and got my speakers hooked up to my computer. I don't have the normal plug-in variety. I have to run it through a receiver and hook up these actually pretty nice speakers. But now it's all hooked up and we're ready to go and actually have sound on this computer. It's kind of nice. Can enjoy Hulu and YouTube and other kinds of iTunes and all kinds of things. But the other benefit is I can actually record this podcast. So I'm sure that benefits all of you, and hopefully today's show will benefit your sports card collections. Got quite a few suggestions from the sportscardradio.com fan forum from Chad S. 333, how to price one-of-one cards. Not sure if I have an exact science or anything like that, but we'll talk about that. Pat's Cards, sites other than eBay to sell your cards, and I have about five of them on my list here, and so we'll talk about that. Spurs Fan 50-21-920 kind of talked about the how similar all the Panini basketball products have been, from Rookies and Stars to Prestige to Threads. Kind of almost seemed like it was all one series, just released at different times. So we'll talk about that. And Utah Jazzman wanted to talk about the Topps 1 million card buyback. And by now, Topps Series 1 Baseball, which we'll talk about a little bit later, has come out. And so you might have seen the redemption cards and things like that in there. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. If you don't know, we also have lots of products that have been released the last month or so, since we haven't had a show in about a month. So we'll talk about some of the products that have come out, some of the big ones, and what kind of happened there, and maybe kind of what's ahead in the future. And if we have time, I'm not sure if we do, but if we do have time, we'll throw in some athletes at the tail end that wore number 43, talk about some of their rookie cards, maybe what I know of their career if I remember them. And maybe some other things along the way. After this very short break, we will talk about just some of the releases in January and maybe even early February. Now that we're one day away from the Super Bowl, by the time you listen to it, you probably already know who won. So I'm on New Year's Eve in terms of the Super Bowl. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. But we'll talk a little bit about football cards, some baseball, a little bit of basketball thrown in there as well. All of that after this short break. Basically some of the previews that we had over on Sports Card Radio, just some of the products that came out, Playoff National Treasures. I have it down here coming out January 27th, so not too long ago. Very big product in terms of the price and things like that. I was looking at some of the YouTube videos, put those up today as well. And it just seems like maybe the cards don't have quite the spectacularness that you kind of look for in a product that you pay for. I saw some sticker autographs and things like that in there. Saw some no color, just plain jersey card autograph rookie cards in there, which I thought was kind of interesting as well. You kind of like to see the patches and things like that. The big plain jersey card in a $300 product doesn't always go over well. And I was also looking at some of the prices on some of the rookie cards out of here, like Sean Green and Donald Brown. Who knows what happens to Donald Brown's cards after the Super Bowl, if he has a big game and things like that. Obviously, it'll affect his National Treasures. But at the time I was looking for, right around that $50, $60 range would definitely get you one, especially with how well Sean Green played. Donald Brown potentially, you know, doing well in the Super Bowl and things like that. Thought they might go for more. But again, it proves Many theories out there that the quarterbacks are where it's at. Both Mark Sanchez and Matthew Stafford autographed rookies were both selling in the $200 range. There's a portion of the rookies that are serial numbered out of 99. It's the big guys like Beanie Wells, and the Staffords and Mark Sanchez, Donna Brown, Sean Green, and Michael Crabtree, Kenny Britt. There's all kinds of guys in here. But it looks like maybe collectors may be passing on this. We have Upper Deck Exquisite coming out toward the tail end of this month. As long as Upper Deck doesn't push it back, you should have it by February. So maybe collectors are waiting. We also have that preview up as well on Sports Card Radio. You can find that in the Exquisite section. I think those cards look a lot nicer. This is just my opinion. I think they look a lot nicer. I believe all cards are on card. You get the same kind of, low serial numbered autograph rookies. I think if you're looking for a big time football product this year, I think I might wait until Exquisite. But if you're broke like me, it really doesn't matter. But the next product, maybe a little bit more for most people. You're looking under $150 a box in most cases for Playoff Contenders Football. I have this coming out January 6th, so about a month ago. Very solid product. The SP Rookie Checklist already came out. The rookie tickets, known since 1998, I believe, was the first year when Peyton Manning and Randy Moss were in there. There were some short prints, and through the years, all kinds of random guys have made it onto the short print list. And this year, one of the lowest copies, actually the lowest copy, goes to Aaron Kelly. He only had 21 copies. I guess he has been cut. I don't think he even plays on a team, but he only has 21 copies, so you can imagine what that would do for his card values. Aaron Maben only has 99 copies. Alphonso Smith, 99. I think Tom Brandstater. Yeah, Tom Brandstater actually grew up in Turlock, California. I think he went to high school there as well, and went to Fresno State and plays quarterback. I think he's a backup maybe for the Bears or the Chargers, one of those. Or he's actually on the Broncos, I believe. He only has 63 copies of his rookie card, so you can imagine what that does. A lot in the 99 range, and then they also counted some of them in that 500 range, Chris Beanie Wells, some of those guys that were one or two per case. That's how they kind of broke this product down. But what's nice about this product, it delivers a standard 4 autographs per box, but 8 out of 12 boxes will have 5 autographs. So most boxes that you pick up of this stuff will have the 5 autographs. A little dicey by the pack, considering there's 24 packs, and at most there's 5 big hits in there. So you want to probably avoid this by the pack. But a little bit better for the low-budget person. Also for the singles, it's always nice to try to pick up some on-card rookies. The only problem I had this with this set, and you can see the preview, I have tons of pictures of the cards up here. The autographs kind of get blended out by, they have this big 2009 rookie on the cards, and it seems like some of the signatures, you can barely see them. I'm looking at a Chris Beanie Wells here. It's very hard to see some of the signatures on there, so I don't know how great that is, but still a nice card. Not going to be, if the player's doing well, people are still going to want to collect their Playoff Contenders cards. Well, that's about it for football. On to baseball, the biggest set of the early year, obviously kind of kicks off the whole season. Top Series 1 baseball cards finally came out. The short print list has collectors fairly excited, especially if you're a Yankees fan. All the pie in the face, PITF for short, is kind of the acronym these cards have came on. I think there's about 12 of them. All the pie in the face Yankee cards are short print. They sell for decent money. I've seen some of them sell in the, the 30 to 60 to sometimes even higher than that. Some of these cards sell for quite a bit of money. Obviously, if you want to complete the whole set, you're going to want to throw in those SP cards. A lot of the other ones are legends like Jackie Robinson, Babe Ruth, Ricky Henderson, Stan Musial, Joe Morgan, guys like that. Pretty cool cards. Out of this set, one of the cards I kind of like, just the design and how they looked, were the Peak Performance Jumbo Jersey cards. I kind of like that Topps was throwing in a really big the jumbo jersey card is basically kind of the letterman size or a very thin border around the edge of the card. So you have a huge jersey, you know, almost takes up the whole, you know, length of the card. Some very nice patches in there. They're serial numbered out of 20, so they're hard to get. But I found these cards very appealing to the eye. I kind of like those. And if you're lucky enough to hit that, pretty nice hit. We might as well talk about the Topps Million Card Giveaway. These are inserted 1-in-6 packs here in the Topps Series 1. And basically what it is Topps is giving away every card that they've made, every base card that they've made from the at least one card from every base set that they've made from the 50s to the 60s all the way into today. So obviously there's quite a bit of, you know, 1991, 1990 Topps and things like that. However, there are like 1952 Mantles and things like that, and all kinds of Jackie Robinson cards and all kinds of great players. So you do have a chance at that. Since it's 1-in-6 packs, you know, jumbo boxes and things like that will give you a good chance at getting quite a few of these. It's an online redemption. You know, once you get the redemption, all the information will be there. You can also buy the redemptions on online and things like that, and we'll talk about, you know, places to sell and buy your cards later. So if you're interested in gambling and things like that, might be kind of exciting. I'm sure it's always fun to pull. I actually opened up a couple packs and we're actually giving them away. We gave away I think both of the packs already on the blog over at Sports Card Radio. And I didn't pull any of the million card giveaway. It's kind of a bummer. I would have loved to see what you end up getting, you know, even if it's just a 1991, you just Joe Blow, it would still be kind of exciting. So I kind of like that. I really like that giveaway. I think it encourages people to collect and kind of look back at the past sets, especially if they're somewhat new to collecting or maybe they didn't collect back then. It'll kind of give them an idea of some of the cards in the past. And it'll give older collectors like myself and even older kind of a blast, real blast of the past when things were, you know, when you could sell a base card for $10 and it was not an SP. So there was all kinds of crazy things that happened back then. So I'm sure there's all kinds of memories once you get your package from Topps. So I really like that promotion. Topps Series 1 apparently seems to be doing pretty well on the horizon for baseball. Topps Heritage is coming up at the end of the month. Topps Finish Baseball shortly after that. Topps Debut is mixed in there. And Topps Series 2 is further on down the line. So some very exciting things coming up for baseball. Well, that about wraps that segment up. After we come back, after this short break, we're going to be talking about some of the basketball cards right in the heat of basketball season. So we might as well talk a little bit about Spurs fan question about Panini's job in their first year doing basketball cards exclusively. And I will preface my opinion of saying I really haven't seen anything other than the photographs and some video box breaks. I haven't bought any packs, and so I haven't held these cards in my hands. So I don't know. You can take it for what it's worth. But I will use Spurs fans' opinion and some others from around the hobby world, and we'll talk about all of that after this. And we are back. Spurs fan asked an interesting question. You know, wanted to know if there was quite a similarity between Prestige, Rookies and Stars, Threads, Panini Certified recently came out Panini Contenders basketball slipped in there as well. And I know just from my brother's experience, I know he wrote up most of the reviews for the products on our website. And it kind of seemed like he was kind of saying that, you know, it's this, there's not much you can say about these sets. They're kind of bland. There's kind of the same old thing. There's not much creativity there other than you have your standard parallels, you know, your colors or your die cuts and things like that. You have that kind of stuff. Lots of sticker autographs and things like that loaded up in there. It appears that the card stocks aren't anything to, you know, it's not on like a UD Black scale. And even looking at, you know, going back to Playoff National Treasures football, just looking at those cards compared to this year's Exquisite, I think I did a blog piece about that as well. Just looking at them side by side, it's like, you know, the Exquisite looked like an expensive card, whereas the Playoff National Treasures looked like something you could pull out of an $80 box. And not to say that every product, like a Prestige and a Rookies and Stars, needs to look amazing and have, you know, all kinds of detail added to the cards. But, you know, when you're releasing some higher-end products, even Panini Certified and, you know, Playoff Contenders basketball and things like that, I expect those cards to be a little bit higher-end. Little bit thicker cards maybe could be used. They look a little thin to my eye. I don't know if that's the case. But I think those kind of things can be improved. It is their first year. We will give Panini a break because it is their first year making basketball cards kind of on a mass scale, although they had plenty of carryover from the Donruss brand, and obviously they've utilized that to the max, considering Prestige, Rookies and Stars, Threads, all those are football products. Contenders is a football product. Certified is a football product. They're pretty much just carrying over that, which is not that bad of a thing because there is brand awareness there, and more than likely you've collected those football sets, or at least you're aware of them. So as a basketball collector, there's some comfort there. You're not just coming out with some brand new B-ball set that you've never even heard of the name. But it would be nice to see some creativity there. We're just kind of seeing the same designs carried over from football, maybe tweaked a little bit with a sticker autograph on there. The only thing that holds these cards up is there's Kobe Bryant autographs. Obviously, you either love Kobe or you hate Kobe, but there's plenty of people that love Kobe. There's a lot of people that love Kobe that have a lot of money. So they are spending some decent money on his autographs. The rookie class isn't anything to jump up and down about, and I think that's obviously not to their fault. It's not their fault. Blake Griffin is out for the entire year. Similar to Greg Oden, he kind of messed with, I believe he was with Topps maybe at the time. And I think Kevin Durant was with Upper Deck. So a lot of the Upper Deck products that year, obviously we don't see that exclusive deal anymore. But obviously Blake Griffin cards not having any chance of going up, really. Really, they're going to come out at a price, whatever people are willing to pay for a guy that's hurt and hasn't played a game yet. Still a big price because he's the number one pick and people are familiar with his talent. But it has hurt the sets this year, and probably has hurt the creativity they could have had because they could have featured somebody like Blake a little bit more, and I'm sure they plan to. Although, with the strong play of somebody like Tyreke Evans and even Brandon Jennings in the beginning of the year, and he still has been playing fairly well, and Brandon Jennings is somebody that connects with the fans as well. I see him, if you're on Facebook, I'm not big on Facebook, but I'll check out whatever's going on there at any given moment. And it seems like Brandon Jennings, I think I became a fan of him or something, and he's on there all the time. And it's really him and pictures and all kinds of funny things. So he's kind of like a Chad Johnson in that sense. So it's a very cool to have players like that that connect with the fans at that level. Should help their cards as long as they continue to play well. So I think Panini, all in all, for the first year, as we're kind of tailing to the end, we'll see if they have any surprises. I just updated the box release calendar. I didn't see anything in the future that really had me going like a National Treasures basketball yet. So maybe I'll send an email over to them or see if we can't dig up some information to see if there's anything that's going to be new or exciting or high-end on the basketball marketplace this year. So I think that's what could maybe salvage their year from maybe being like a C- to maybe even possibly lower than that, because it's really, we haven't seen any breakthroughs. We haven't seen any creativities from a brand new company. It's really just using the football and the people that were in place at playoff, really using their designs and their kind of ideas for basketball. So, and we've seen lots of sticker autographs and things like that, even in the football. So we'll see what happens, not to be overly hard on them. They do a good job at sharing information, and I'm sure it's their first year, so they're still working through the things and through in a tough marketplace where it's tough to make money selling any product or really doing anything. They're doing a pretty good job, but I wouldn't say they've gone over and above a Tops or even an Upper Deck at this point. So, but that about wraps it up for my opinion. Hopefully that works it out. Spurs fan kind of sums it up in the fan forum, where he said Tops and Tops Finest were very different, and I totally agree. Tops, Tops Finest, even Tops and Tops Chrome, I don't mind sets that parallel like that. I really actually like those kind of sets. It kind of makes the Tops Chrome set stand out even more, because, you know, there is some collectability in the regular Tops, but then when you have that Tops Chrome factor, you know, the exact same set basically, maybe with a few added foo-foos, but just with the chrome added, I like those kind of sets. Finest was always revolutionary. Had like the peel-off protective. You know, some of those things don't work. They had mystery cards. They had like, you know, no border refractors and black border refractors and all kinds of different ones. Kept it exciting. And Topps tends to do that probably better than any other company. And I think Panini and Prestige and things like that, they'll work on hopefully throwing in these little surprises and twists that kind of give your product a little bit of buzz over and above kind of the standard you know, promotion that it normally gets. So we'll see if they learn those kind of things. We'll see what happens going forward. That about wraps it up for this segment. After this very short break, we're going to talk about how to price one of one cards, and probably at the same time talk about places you can sell them other than eBay. We'll talk about those two topics after this. Talk about how to price some one-of-one cards and also where to sell them. Maybe if you pull some of these nice cards. How to price one-of-one cards. Probably the most relevant technique. Probably one of the most useful technique at this point. You know, several years ago, it was very hard to price one-of-one cards because there wasn't all these, like, you know, printing plates and all these one-of-one cards that have come out. Pretty much every set has some kind of one-of-one parallel. Usually multiple one-of-one parallels. So it's much harder several years ago. Now there's many one-of-ones out on the market, so you can get a general idea by going to some of the places. We'll talk about them in a minute. Obviously eBay comes to mind because it's the largest and more often than not has some of the biggest quantity and the most selection, and you can go back and search 30 days completed and things like that. So it's a very interesting way to price them. Is say you pulled just an Albert Pujols one-of-one, someone like him, very popular player, you should be able to find some kind of, you know, comparison. even if you find something that's, you know, numbered to 5 or numbered to 3, you can kind of line up the prices there. Sometimes that one of one doesn't have that big punch as it used to, unless it has a multicolored swatch with a nice autograph and things like that. If it's just a plain base one of one, unless we're looking at like an Allen and Ginter, a very highly collected set, typically we're looking for, you know, autographs and patches, so you can kind of put it to that level. So someone like Albert Pujols, obviously an autograph and a patch, you're starting probably in the low three figures, maybe slightly lower than that. I'm not sure how hot his stuff is at the moment. But, you know, some of the lesser known players, someone like Buster Posey, who hasn't had that many baseball cards yet, or even someone like Sean Green in football, or even like Tyreek Evans, who we've talked about, who doesn't have as many one-of-one cards yet, it's much harder to price. So I would just take a look at, you know, is it a base card? Is there no autograph? Is it just a one-of-one card? You're going to be able to price that card accordingly. If it's like a parallel of the rookie card, you're going to be able to take the rookie card price and probably multiply it maybe by half, maybe by a full, 100%. It just kind of depends. Usually probably, you know, if it's a $20 rookie card and you have the one of one, my guess is you could get at least $35 to $40, maybe slightly higher than that, maybe slightly less than that, depending on the set. Now, when it's autograph and jersey in there, obviously we're looking at a much different kind of price range there. You want to start off at similar sets and similar autographs. Say you pull a Tyreek Evans one-of-one Panini certified. You know, compare it to the Elite. See if his Panini Elite has something similar, and I would go back. That's a good way to do it. You can also compare to other players. It's very hard off the top of my head to compare Tyreek Evans to somebody else, but maybe you could compare him to Deron Williams and see what a one-of-one autograph of his goes for. And I think the more creative you get, the best you can get a price for it. But there's also some other things you want to factor in. If you're just going for a street price, if you're just looking to sell it, probably the best thing to do is just to start it at a very low price, especially if you're doing it auction. Just start it at a low price and see how it goes. If you're doing it at a set price, I would set the price high. I would just set it maybe far higher than you would consider getting for it and have a make offer or, you know, a best offer suggestion. So somebody could make an offer on the card as well. Because somebody, a one-of-one to a collector, you know, an Albert Pujols fan that wants to collect as many Albert Pujols cards, or a Buster Posey fan that wants to have, you know, one of the best Buster Posey collections, they're really going to want that card, and they might actually pay a little bit more than the average price for it, because they know it might be one of their only chances to get it. So those are my best options. So I think if you're selling it one-of-one at auction, I would start it at the lowest possible price and just see where it goes, because there's no way to start it at a price and have it go up from there. I would just, you know, see where it goes, see how many bids you can get on it. I think that would be the key there. If you're selling at a flat price, price it as high as you can. If you're looking for a trade, factor in how badly the guy wants the card. If he's a fan, if this is like a super collector kind of thing, he's trying to build up as many of this player as he can, then you could probably price it a little bit higher. Price it at the high end that you think you can get for it, because this is a card this person really wants. Again, they know it might be their only chance to get that card. So hopefully that helps a little bit with one-of-one cards. I think really that's the only way to go. Obviously, I mean, there's no way Beckett or any pricing authority can really price these cards other than give you snippets of how much they go for. You really have got to do the digging yourself. I would look on auction sites after this segment. My voice is getting a little scratchy, so we'll probably break out to the next segment where we'll talk about other places where you can possibly find some one-of-one cards. Or again, like I said, at this point, one-of-one cards, typically, obviously there's some rare examples in some of the higher-end products, or obviously like cut autographs and things like that. That's kind of a whole different beast. one-of-ones typically aren't as special as they used to be, so you can sometimes compare them to one-of-three. There's all kinds of very low serial number. I consider anything lower than five extremely rare, almost one-of-one. So you can sometimes do the comparison that way if you can't find something one-of-one worthy of the same player. And then remember, you can always go to a different player. If you can't find something of that particular player, find somebody that you find on the same kind of collectability, popularity, all that. I'm sure you can find somebody in almost every case, and do some comparison there. It'll at least give you a rough estimate. But again, as it being a one-of-one card, you never really know until you actually sell it. So remember, go for the high price when somebody's looking to buy it outright for a given price and a best offer price. Try to drive the price high because it will be one of the only times to get that card. Well, after this short break, that segment was from Chad S333. This next segment's from Pat's Cards wants to know other sites other than eBay where you can sell some of your cards. We'll talk about that after this. Welcome back. We're going to talk about where to sell some cards other than eBay. I take it Pat's Cards. I know he sells a lot of cards on eBay and stuff. Follow him on Facebook and things like that. Sells quite a few cards. So I take it he meant online. So I've got a couple places here. First one that seems to be growing in popularity. Checkoutmycards.com. Great domain. I love that. Great use of a four-word domain. Checkoutmycards.com. I do believe, don't quote me on this, I believe I read an interview a while back with the guy that started, a very smart guy that developed a script to be able to handle people listing their cards and hosting the pictures and things like that. So very, very nicely well-designed website, one-off kind of style, not a template kind of thing. Very well done website. They actually have a team. I believe I was on their website a couple weeks ago. It said they just recently moved and they're going to be expanding. They have, I think, 20 people working for them, or they plan to get 20 people working for them, something like that. So it's actually a pretty good company, it looks like. Looks like they're growing considerably. So that's one place to go. I know that they have some lower fees, I guess. I've never used them before. So you want to obviously go to their website. Obviously, if you've sold before, you're interested in selling, you always want to do plenty of research on the site and check out what other people are saying. Obviously, plenty of people use this site, so people do like it. So that's an option. Another option is The Pit and the Naxcom, I guess. I guess that's how you say it. The Pit is a little bit different. They have to have their cards listed on their exchange. So if you don't have the cards or don't have a lot of them, it doesn't really do you a whole lot of good. And Naxcom, a little bit different, more like Check Out My Cards. You can kind of list your own collection, list quite a few different cards. They have their own little flat shipping rates. They obviously, you want to read through them. They have different levels of membership and things like that there. I know they have lots of cards on there. I'm sure it's very similar to Check Out My Cards. They're both under eBay in terms of popularity, but how far they are under there, it's hard to say. Obviously, lots of single card collectors and stuff know where to go, especially serious ones. They know they can go to these websites and find these cards, so not a bad option. These are good for buy it nows. You know, most eBay's actually an auction house, and I think that's what it's best used for. So if you have a lot of cards that you kind of want a certain price for, that you want to hit without having to pay exorbitant fees on eBay and things like that, you're going to want to try to go to these places. Obviously, you never avoid the PayPal fees, but you obviously want to review the fees and things like that associated with these sites as well. But definitely good for buy it nows. Check out My Cards and Naxcom. Amazon is another one. I don't think this one gets used quite as much as other ones. I don't know if it's because it's difficult to sell on there. I've never sold on Amazon. I know it's one of the most popular websites in the world, mainly for books and music and things like that, and electronics. But I'm sure I've seen cards on there. I know there's sports memorabilia and sports items on there. Just definitely not quite as much. It seems like people use Amazon maybe as a last resort, but it's definitely worth checking out. It might be something that you can use to maybe expand your horizons if you're just dealing in sports cards and you kind of want to maybe test some other items. Amazon might be something where you can go and get some ideas and see what other people are selling. Because typically from some of these sports card dealers and wholesalers, they have other things. They have gaming products. They sometimes have race cars. They sometimes have collectibles like that. I've even seen board games and, you know, obviously the bobbleheads and things like that. So if you want to expand your horizon, Amazon may or may not be a good place for cards. I don't know. It's may be worth a try if you have some decent cards and the fees aren't that much on there. Well, it might be worth a shot building up a reputation there. And if you want to expand your horizons to some other things, you know, talk to some where you're, you know, wholesalers and distributors and things like that. They might have some other items you have there that might be suitable for an Amazon and will help your sports collection stand out on there as well. The last website I have is Sports Lots. This is kind of like, I don't know if this is a back-ended compliment or not, but it kind of reminds me of the Craigslist of cards. Very simple website, not to, you know, downgrade the website at all. It's very sophisticated, the system they have set up there. It's a very simple website, has quite a few cards on there listed, and they have a decent network throughout the community of people promoting the site. It's, again, another place, good place to sell cards and things like that, especially large lots. Obviously, Sports Lots with the name. If you have stacks of Dallas Cowboys or stacks of New York Yankee cards or stacks of Chicago Cubs cards, there are collectors out there that definitely want these cards. So it might be a good option that you can explore. I encourage you, if you're really into selling single cards and you really want to make a decent amount of money for you, your best option is going by volume, and you want to try to move as many cards as you can per day, or however you look at it, per week, per month, but you want to break it down to a short period of time. You want to try to make as many sales in a short amount of time as possible, and one of the best ways to do that is get exposure across a whole network of sites. And what you can do, I suggest, is if you're really into it, say you have quite a few cards, you have a huge amount of collection, and you're willing to spend some time on it. It seems like Pat's Cards has a lot of cards, and he's taken a lot of time putting all the auctions up with all the pictures and stuff like that in the descriptions on eBay. You know, if you're at that level and you're that kind of seller, you want to get to that level, best way to do it is get exposure on all these sites. Figure out what it costs. Get all that really tight. You know, give yourself plenty of time to research it, several weeks to a month, to research all the sites. Give yourself plenty of time to go over the fees, run some tests in your head, you know, some sample auctions in your head. Say, if I sold this card for this amount, how much minus PayPal, minus check out mycards.com fees, etc., etc., shipping, you know, what is your total take home at the end, and see how you're going to have to price your cards. And if you can see that you can be competitive in the market, go ahead and jump in, and, you know, spend some time outside of eBay getting on Check Out My Cards. And what you can do is cross sell. A lot of the times, you know, serious collectors, they buy from all these places. They buy from Sports Lots, they buy from Check Out My Cards, they definitely buy from eBay. So you can, what I like to do is create a little flyer. If you have a little logo or just something, you know, spend, you know, an hour on just make a little flyer with an email address. If you have a website, that's perfect for that. And you can also say this, hey, this is my eBay name. Check me out there. This is my name on Check Out My Cards. This is my name on Naxxon. This is my name on Amazon. These are my cards on Sports Lots. And you can kind of do the whole cross sell so they have a pleasurable experience with you. They get the cards fast. It's what they wanted. They were in good condition. You ship them well. Then, hey, they're going to maybe jump on their computer right there and check you out on those other places, and maybe see what else you have. So it's a good way to cross sell and cross market, and get more sales on a regular basis. Because if you're selling a lot of single cards, you want to go as high volume as possible. And I strongly suggest, sure, it'd be great, you know, if you're churning it out on eBay and that's going great, I say take it to another level, and spend an hour a day or an hour and a half, 2 hours a day, and work on a different site, work on a different outlet, and try to build up some payments there, because you never know what happens with eBay. I wish I could remember them. I have tons of stories where I was suspended for 30 days, or, you know, this happened, or, you know, my PayPal, something happened to my PayPal account. All kinds of things happen with eBay where it can really shut you down if that's where you're relying on some side income or even a majority of your income. You know, it'd be nice if you had something else to back you up. So it's definitely a good idea to check out some of these websites. Hopefully that helps you out just a little bit. I think we've covered everything we wanted to. We still have some time here. So I'm going to cover a few athletes that wear number 43. Just what I know about them, not necessarily card related, maybe a little bit, but we'll talk about them after this. And we are back. We got about enough time to talk about four players. War number 43. These all come from the fan forum, sportscardradio.com. First one, Dennis Eckersley. I grew up, you know, I was a Giants fan, so I didn't necessarily like Dennis Eckersley, but at the time, he was considered probably the best reliever of all time until really Mariano Rivera kind of took that over from him. He played from 1975 to 1998. Add that up, that's 23 years. Was a great pitcher, was very consistent in an era of some of those years where players were using performance enhancing and things like that. So was a great pitcher, obviously Hall of Fame, and one of the greatest relievers of all time, and had a great look. That's what I remember about Dennis Eckersley. He's one of those players where if you know Dennis Eckersley at all, you've seen him enough times, especially if you're my age or older, you just say the name Dennis Eckersley and you think mustache, skinny dude with mustache, you know, and he's really good. Great placement, great fastball, great player, probably under-collected and definitely worth looking at. If you're just looking at those kind of sleeper guys that, you know, everybody knows it's great, but maybe somewhat under-collected. He's a great player to collect for baseball collectors. Next one, Troy Polamalu. He went to USC, played with Carson Palmer, and obviously he plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's won, I believe, two Super Bowls. he's quite a player. It seems like whenever the Steelers struggle, it seems like the Steelers are one of those teams, you can count them out. They have a bad season, and then they win a Super Bowl, and then they have a season like they did this year. Not so great. You know, they had some tough breaks, and they lost some close games and things like that. Not necessarily all their fault. But a lot of it had to do was because Troy Polamalu was hurt. And I believe in some of the other years, maybe the year after they won their Super Bowl several years back, I believe Troy Polamalu was hurt. And I do believe they won some games last year. I believe he was hurt, maybe even for the Super Bowl or some games leading up to there. But he is the key to their defense, especially as players move around in free agency and guys get older and stuff. He's definitely the key to the defense. Seems like he confuses quarterbacks and confuses offensive coordinators and things like that, because he kind of roams around the field, kind of does his own thing, occasionally blitzes, can come up and stop the run, and obviously can intercept the ball and is all over the field, kind of Ed Reed style. Definitely one of the best to play if he can stay healthy. Seems like he has some nagging injuries, and it probably is adept to how he plays, because he's all over the field and he's always in the action and always making hits and things like that. So if he can stay healthy, you know, obviously the Steelers defense plays at a much higher level. So we'll see what happens there, but he's a great player. Another one of those very rare defensive players that you can collect. I was doing some football rookie Rolodexes for the site, and I was doing like Jared Allen, and I forget, there was another defensive player that I did that I was thinking, wow, that, you know, you very, very rarely can you think of a defensive player when they're collectible. So Troy Polamalu is one of those guys, not only because he plays for the Steelers, but because he has a great image. He is on TVs and commercials, and like his Dandruff commercials are pretty, Head and Shoulders commercials are pretty funny, and he does some stuff for the NFL and things like that. Very recognizable player, obviously because he's won and he's in Pittsburgh, but he plays very well when he's healthy, and he's definitely worth collecting on the defensive side of the ball. Another one, I think this one came from San Jose Fuji, Michael Thompson. And this is really only if you're a Lakers fan or you followed basketball in the early 90s, late 80s. Michael Thompson went to 4 NBA Finals and won 2 NBA championships with the Lakers. And he basically was their backup center, because he played behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, basically one of the best centers of all time, and who chewed up tons of minutes. Obviously, considering he has the scoring title, he chewed up plenty of minutes when he played during his many years playing in the NBA. But Michael Thompson was a backup. I remember I was very young. Michael Thompson was when I was not even a teenager, basically. So I do remember Michael Thompson, but I remember liking Michael Thompson. I remember my parents not liking Michael Thompson, mainly because he wasn't Kareem. He wasn't James Worthy. Wasn't AC Green. He wasn't even Kurt Rambis. So Michael Thompson was kind of one of those guys, but definitely played a role. Obviously, Kareem had to sit. Kareem potentially was in foul trouble some nights. So Michael Thompson was in there. And I remember him, just a good, serviceable backup center that won some NBA titles. Take that, Charles Barkley and Karl Malone. Last one, Tom Nelson, another very unknown to anybody but probably me, myself, and a few others. Tom Nelson plays for the Cincinnati Bengals. If you watched Hard Knocks, that was on HBO, and I found it online several places. Not necessarily legally, but I watched it via that way and grew to know Tom Nelson. Didn't know him, obviously being a rookie and not, I think he was a very late round draft pick, if that. But plays in the secondary. Looked like he had great technique. He was always around the ball, always had his shoulders square, and looked like he had great footwork from the footage that I saw on Hard Knocks. And looked like he studied hard. And we haven't talked about, I was kind of really bummed out that the Bengals lost, but it's always nice seeing them in a playoff game. I can't complain. Being a Bengals fan, you don't rarely get to see them in a playoff game. So it was just nice to see them in a playoff game. But a lot of the reason why the Bengals had some success this year was because of their attitude. They didn't pass the ball. Their offense was pretty bad at a lot of times this year. Aside from Cedric Benson, their offense was pretty horrible. And if it wasn't for Cedric Benson, they definitely probably wouldn't have made the playoffs. But what led the Bengals through is they definitely have an attitude change. Guys like Tom Nelson is a guy they wouldn't have had 4 or 5 years ago because he wasn't kind of that blueprint athletic guy. He was, you know, wasn't very athletically gifted. I don't think he's particularly tall or particularly big or muscular, but he's a smart player and he's in the right position and studies hard and works hard, and that rubs off on other players and makes other people work harder because they see this other guy start getting time and start playing well, and they're thinking about their own job. And that's, you know, that goes on a lot in the NFL. And a show like Hard Knocks kind of gives you an idea a little bit into that, is there's always a competition for your job, whether you're a new player or even a star player, because you can always be moved or cut in the NFL. And that's pretty much it. Whatever guaranteed money that's not guaranteed to you is not going to be owed to you. So it's a cutthroat business. Someone like Tom Nelson made it through there. It shows that if you work hard and you play well, and you study hard and you're in the right spot and you do what the coaches ask, you're going to make the team. And I'm glad the Bengals have adopted that philosophy. You know, obviously they take gambles on guys, but, you know, we need guys that have their head on straight and are there to play football. And I think we saw that they've been doing that, and that's why they've had success this year. So that about wraps it up for the show today. We will have another one shortly, probably by next week. Some interesting stuff, lots of stuff going on. The next show, hopefully have an interview for you. I plan to have it on this one, but just with all my sound stuff, I got to charge my phone, goes out of battery every 4 minutes, so I've got to charge that up. But we'll have an interview of some sort. We'll have hopefully a string of these as we go forward. If I can line them up and get the clip in there, we'll definitely have a string of interviews coming through on the shows about various topics and from various people around the collecting world. So we'll do those in there. The next show, there, if you're not really privy to it and you're not, don't have your ear to the sports card business world, Upper Deck and Tops and Konami and all, counterfeit Yu-Gi-Oh cards to MLB suing Upper Deck and shutting down production of baseball cards. Lots of things going on in the business worlds of sports cards, so we'll talk a little bit about that. There's a little bit of a lull in product until kind of the end of the month. Obviously, there's a few things coming out, so we'll maybe touch on that. And anything else you can decide, throw me an idea over the Sports Card Radio fan forum. Send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. Do what you gotta do. That about wraps it up. So until next time, hopefully everybody's doing well out there. Good luck with your collections. We're out of here.